So it's the end of an era in Northern Ireland, a fiery and often bombastic era at that. Protestant politician Ian Paisley was not one to hide his light under a bushel, to play coy, or to bend even slightly on the issue of an independent Northern Ireland, no matter what then Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher wanted.
Mrs. Thatcher tells us that that republic must have some say in our province. We say never, 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 never.
In a career consisting of one full-throated rebuke after another, Ian Paisley's most pointed diatribes were saved for the Catholic Church. On the floors of legislatures in both Ulster and Brussels, in sermons, and whenever a reporter asked, Paisley would engage in the kind of militant anti-Catholic sentiment you almost never hear expressed publicly, at least not in the United States. A little more than a year after agreeing to share power with his former enemies, the 82-year-old politician has just stepped down as First Minister of Northern Ireland. Fionnuala O'Connor covers Northern Ireland for The Economist. She's the author of Breaking the Bonds, Making Peace in Northern Ireland. She's with us from Belfast. Thank you for being on the program. And first question is, how did Ian Paisley manage to get to the top of Northern Irish unionist politics?
Largely by the power of his tongue, Mike. He's an amazing speaker, as you've just said, and he's always managed to appeal to the worst in his audiences while telling them that he represents the best, that he represents God's word. And the sheer eloquence with which he expresses himself and the way he raises these basic fears in a population which has always thought of itself through three centuries as embattled and besieged is really the answer to his popularity. He was an amazingly talented speaker, and he always managed to couch it in ways that brought people to vote as well as to fear. One of his standard lines on the stump was, "I am the only unionist who can top the poll and bring confusion to Ulster's enemies." And he was saying that until about 10 years ago.
Was he merely channeling this very angry public, or was his stance itself making the people more riled up than they would be otherwise?
That's always been the accusation against him. The academic Steve Bruce, who's made a study of his religious beliefs, says that in his religious writings, which he's done an awful lot of, and in his preaching, he makes constant reference to the sacred history of Protestantism, says Bruce. The massacre of Huguenots, the Reformation martyrs, the horrors of the Inquisition. In a multitude of ways, he reminds his audience of the terrible things that have been done by the Catholic Church in the past, and only by an absolute uncompromising stand can they avoid a similar fate. So he wedded that kind of language about religious history to a very demagogic, very dangerous, almost racist form of language at the beginning of before the Troubles began, before the conflict burst into the open. He was saying that the arrival of Catholic families in a mainly Protestant area was an infiltration of two-legged rats. That appeared in a newly formed leaflet that he wrote and distributed in that area.
He frequently compared Catholics to vermin. That was one of his tropes.
It was that they bred like rabbits and multiplied like vermin. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of the conflict, he also told people that the murder gangs of the Roman Catholic Church and the Marxist are operating together by night. So he managed to pull all sorts of demon figures out of the nighttime shadows of his audience's minds.
And he didn't care who was in the audience. At one time, Pope John Paul II was on the floor of the European Parliament. He was a member of that parliament at that point. He stood up and called Pope John Paul II the Antichrist. We have some news coverage of that incident at the time.
The Pope could barely begin his meeting.
First of all, permit me to say how much I...
Pope remained calm, clearly anticipating the heckler in the back row. Mr. Paisley quoted a 16th century anti-papist slogan as furious Euro MPs threw papers at him in disgust.
He had a sign that called the Pope the Antichrist. Other European ministers threw papers at him. His public back home, how did they react to that?
Well, they loved it. Some loved it, and some were embarrassed. I mean, his vulgarity of expression, I think, always caused a kind of ripple of disquiet among many Protestants. But the terrible thing was that by appealing to this fear at the bottom of a lot of Protestant hearts that they were going to be overwhelmed and pushed out of Ireland, pushed back to England and Scotland, where their far ancestors had come from 300 to 400 years ago, where they have no roots anymore or no homeland anymore, there always was this appeal that overcame the embarrassment. I mean, the vulgarity, he'd actually expressed himself about Europe before he didn't just do it on the floor of the European Parliament. Before he was elected to the European Parliament, he'd said that Europe was a brazen, the representation of Europe in the first stamp to commemorate the European Community showed a woman, an unclean woman with see-through garments riding on the beast. This kind of language always embarrassed some people, but appealed to others. Mm-hmm. And it's partly, that vulgarity is partly what kept Paisley from consolidating his hold politically on unionism in Northern Ireland until recently. It took him until 6 years ago to become the major party in unionism. And at that point, you could see that this massive ego and this no stance was changing, that he had decided now that he was on top, he could begin to compromise himself.
So, and he is making some deals with Catholics and sitting down with Sinn Féin, shaking the hand of Gerry Adams, which he swore never to do. But there's one last question I want to ask, which is about rhetoric. In the United States, 50 years ago, you could just be blatantly racist. And now you at least have to couch that language. What's the state of publicly expressing anti-Catholicism in Northern Ireland? We don't have very long for the answer, but...
Well, legislation has never worked, and there hasn't been a successful prosecution. With Paisley gone from the scene, I don't think anybody else is going to voice that kind of hatred anymore. It still exists underneath the surface, not very far beneath the surface. But with Paisley gone, we're not going to have that colourful bombast anymore. That's one good bit of his legacy.
Fionnuala O'Connor, who covers Northern Ireland for The Economist. Thank you very much, Fionnuala.
Thanks, Mike.
Stay with us. Coming up next on the BPP, you can stop holding your breath now, all you iPhone fanatics. The new one is on its way. We will totally dork out with the editor of Gizmodo. Plus, David Sedaris reads from his new book. Don't want to miss that. That's coming up next on the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.